Today on Black Twitter Talk, we are talking Kendrick's Damn. Janet Jackson is not a gold digger, and Auntie Maxine. Stay tuned.
Send me.
Thanks for tuning in to Black Twitter, y'all. It's a special Easter Sunday episode where we're gonna talk about Kendrick Lamar all day. Hey, hey. He is risen.
Easter.
I am your host, Angie Skates. You can find me on Twitter at Angie_Skates and on the gram at Big_Ange.
What's up, you guys? It's your girl Kels. You already know you can find me on Twitter and the gram at TheUrbanGypsyLA. And this is our jam. I've been having this on repeat outside of Kendrick's album.
This is Khalid, right?
Yes.
And this is off of his American Teen album. This is actually the remix, but I love this song. Ooh.
No, I'm off of.
Yeah, I don't know what key that is.
I'm harmonizing.
Oh, but Khalid does it better with Kehlani and Lil Wayne on the remix.
Kehlani's on a remix?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I like Kehlani too.
Mm-hmm. She goes in. But y'all know, because we've all been waiting for it, Kendrick's album.
Damn!
And that's exactly how we felt after we heard it. And I still have so much more to get through on this album. I mean, I've heard it from top to bottom, from bottom to top, top to bottom, in the middle, all the way around on the side. You're losing your rings, girl. But it's still so much that I feel like I haven't unearthed. But we're gonna... How did it make you feel?
First of all,
did you get through it?
Yeah, I got through it.
Okay.
But I feel like I haven't really sat with it. I feel like with Kendrick's album, it's always all these layers and different meanings and themes and stuff. And I'm still kind of trying to understand exactly what are you trying to tell us, Kendrick?
Let's talk about the cover art.
What about it? Everybody's going ham about it. Like, what do you think about it? I feel like it's really simple.
I think it's very simple, but he's saying so much. He has, like, this really... I don't know, like, he's in a trance almost. Maybe he just feels depleted from everything that he gave on this masterpiece, and he's just like, this is how you gonna feel after you hear everything I just gave you.
Okay. Damn. I see that. I don't know, I feel like it's hella simple. It's cool, but a lot of people are going in about it like it's like the most artistic picture we've ever seen, and it's very simple to me.
Well, the typography, it's kind of reminiscent of the Times magazine, right? And
yeah.
I saw a lot of people on Twitter juxtapose Donald Trump on the cover of Time and then this cover too.
Oh, okay. Then I like that.
Oh.
I didn't see that.
I also, what's the show where they're moving on up to the east side.
Uh-huh.
Weezy, is that the mama from that show?
Uh-huh.
She was also graced the cover of this.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
You didn't
that.
See that one? Mm-hmm. That was a good one.
Then I heard, like, you know how you have the people who have the Illuminati theories or whatever. They were talking about the M is positioned right above his head, representing horns and, like, all these deep, deep, deep meanings. I'm like, yo,
no,
bring it on back.
It's a whole theory based on the album cover and I don't know.
And how he released it, the dates and everything.
Yeah, and how there's another album coming called Nation today. Like, I'll just be like, bruh, y'all reaching.
Too much.
Too much. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the producers that came together and worked on this album. Soundwave, who is from Compton, he has worked on a lot of Kendrick's stuff. Terrace Martin produced on this album, too. Mike Will made it. He's one of my faves. James Blake, Cardo, Steve Lacy from the Internet Band. This kid is amazing. He produced the track called, I think it's Pride, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he produced this track with sounds that he made from his iPhone.
Yeah, the whole album was made off the iPhone. I mean, not the whole album. That whole track was off the album, right?
Yeah, because off his iPhone. Because the music that he makes it from his iPhone.
That's dope.
It's so dope. I'm so proud of the Internet Band. They're all just, like, rightfully reveling in the glory that they should have. But the production on this album was sick. It was crazy. The lyrical content, crazy. The overall thematic messages that Kendrick is given. He talks about religious. He talks about politics. He talks about... what else did he talk about?
Those are the main things that always stand out to me that I'm, like, always super interested in or super intrigued by is the way that he incorporates religion into his albums.
Yeah.
And, again, he did it again, and he goes deeper this time than I feel he did the last time. And so that's part of where I'm like, okay, I need to keep sitting with this because... you know, religion is pretty deep.
It is very deep, and I have some comments about that. But first, I want to talk about the statements that he made about Geraldo Rivera. We all know what a hack that guy is. Happy Easter, Geraldo, whatever your name is. Anyway, so he's made comments about Kendrick Lamar and how his live performance of All Right that he did a couple years ago, he said that hip-hop is more devastating to young black teens or youth in America than actual racism is, and that he just doesn't like Kendrick and his message and blah, 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 blah. So Kendrick definitely comes at, is it Geraldo or Geraldo? It depends on where you're from, I guess. he comes at his neck, and he basically has whole bars, like just whole verses where he's deconstructing that myth. I think it's interesting that white people always feel that they have the right or the need to assert themselves into certain conversations, asserting things like hip-hop is more destructive than actual racism in America, when hip-hop is a symptom of the racism that we've experienced in America. It's an expression that we use as an outlet to talk about the kinds of things that we've endured as black people in this country at the hands of racism and chattel slavery of our people. And I just think it's interesting how people are often inserting themselves into that conversation as an authoritarian, saying this is what it is and this is how, like, no, shut up, sit down. And that's pretty much what Kendrick did, and I'm thankful for that. What else?
You said you didn't have enough time to unearth this, but I'm gonna go ahead and disagree because you got all these points about it. Okay, girl,
I sat with it, and these are things
she lied.
I didn't lie. These are things that came up to me. I think this is Kendrick at his best. This is his fourth studio album.
Why do you think it's him at his best?
Because he's always had the lyrical content. I feel like he reaches deep in the themes and things that he talks about. He's not a politician, but he's often talking about politics and things that are that matter to us. And I feel like his storytelling abilities have gotten progressively better, and not to say that they weren't already good, but in the song, for instance, the last song on the album, Duckworth, I feel like he raps in parables, much like that of the rapper Nas, who I think is the best storyteller in that sense, as far as putting a parable in a hot 16, you know what I mean? And I think that Kendrick, he flexes and he does that very well on this album. And then also the story play, because I've heard a lot of people say if you play the album from front to back, it tells a story of Kendrick Lamar. But if you play it from back to front, it tells a story of Kung Fu Kenny. And I just think that the consistency of his storytelling ability, even if you do play the album from front to back, back to front.
Well, who was Kung Fu Kenny?
Kung Fu Kenny's like an alter ego. I think that has more to deal with him outside of his own...
like an outer body experience?
Yeah, because, you know, he in the To Pimp a Butterfly, I feel like it was a very internal stream of consciousness that we were witnessing, that we were experiencing. And then on this album, Kung Fu Kenny is kind of like the exterior version, the manifestation of everything that he was pondering and, you know, going through internally in his mind. This is an outer manifestation of it, and I like it.
Okay, see. I hadn't gotten that deep yet, so now it's like I need to go back and listen and consider these things.
I asked you, did you sit with it? No, just kidding.
And I told you no. Oh. I said I heard it once twice.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
No, I already said what I had to say. Like, I already love it. I'm always interested in the religious undertones that are brought up, and I guess I'm super excited about that, or just overall how, even with him and then with Chance the Rapper, I just love to see how our generation expressed how religion has affected us and how we interpret it, because it was fed to us. And now we're at that age and in this part of our life where it's like, okay, we can reconstruct it and define it for ourselves. So I'm always intrigued by how that plays out.
Yes. The thing that it kind of irked me a little bit about this album is the rhetoric that his cousin Carl Duckworth was giving. Mm-hmm. He was saying that, you know, because we're black, we're cursed, and because we're poor, we're cursed, and this, that, and the other. And he was quoting Bible verses in Deuteronomy and this, that. And he said that we're not black, we're Israelites. And I have a hard time with that, because these are ideologies and principles and, you know, things that I've struggled with in religion. And I'm definitely not an Israelite. Definitely black. And I definitely find Carl Duckworth, whatever really annoying. He really annoyed the crap out of me. But I think it's interesting because I don't necessarily think that Kendrick is absorbing or even internalizing the things that Carl is saying about religion, but it has affected him and has shaped him. And I think even on the what song is it? A couple of songs he talks about it. I think it shows even his struggle with what he will and will not accept as far as what is useful to him.
Right. And yeah, that's why I guess it doesn't bother me, because I mean, we have a Carl Duckworth in our family, you run into or whatever. Like, everybody, a lot of people believe in the Bible as a literal, as a literal document to say what's going on right now. So it doesn't bother me. I always feel like with any religion, you take the part that resonate with you and that makes sense to you, and that, you know, you just live a morally correct life or whatnot. And so I agree with you in the sense that it doesn't seem like Kendrick's absorbing it and saying and putting that in the album as to say, like, oh, this is the truth. This is what I heard, and then right, this is how I interpreted, or this is part of the influence in my life. Like, right, I'm out here, I'm in the streets, I'm a hood NIG, and then, but I do have like roots in religion and practicing this. And then also he has the song where he talks about putting all the religions in one room to tell them that none of us are shit and that God is the true God. Basically, like, we all trying to basically say one is better than the other or one is more superior, and it's like, nah, ain't none of y'all mean nothing.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that he says over and over on the song Elements, but even, you know, sound bites throughout the rest of the album, ain't nobody praying for me. It's like, oh, Kendrick, why? Uncle Carl isn't praying for you? Like, no, you don't think so? He said his grandma's dead, and, you know, his mom. Oh, he talks about it a lot on Fear, too.
What?
Just, you know, internalizing everything that we are taught about ourselves and our religion and our spirituality and our race, and, you know, how violent and aggressive that really is. There's just so much to unearth unearth in your ear. If you haven't heard it, you definitely need to get into
it. So what's your favorite tracks?
I think this is Kendrick at his best. I think DNA, for me, it rocked something. When I first heard it, I couldn't get past it. I had to play it over and over and over again. But also Duckworth.
Duckworth. Is that his last name in real life?
I don't know. So his dad is Kenneth Duckworth on the album Duckworth. And then his uncle is Carl Duckworth. And
yeah, Kendrick Duckworth. Interesting.
I don't know. Lamar must be his middle name.
It must be. Good for him. Because I ain't rocking with the Duckworth. But I think I'm still rocking with Be Humble. Like, I'm listening to the tracks, and every time Be Humble comes on, once it comes on, I'm like, I think I'm going to skip it because I've already played it out. But I'm like, nah, and I start rocking to it. And I love Elements. I like Love. I like, it was another one I really like. But I like a lot of them. And I think what I love about Kendrick, too, or this album, is that there are these deep themes and topics that we're talking about, but then there's also tracks that everybody could kind of just vibe to, and they don't have to go deep if they don't want to.
That's that West Coast,
and that's how I feel too. And I'm riding in the car listening to it, I'll be like, yes, I'm so happy I'm from the West.
Something that I could just sit back and ride out to. Yeah. I just got off the plane and I was whipping down the 101, turning on that Kendrick. I'm like, yeah.
And then when you ride by, you hear another car playing, and you're like, yeah.
He does. It's a West Coast thing. I don't expect y'all to understand.
Unless
she's from the West. Anyway, so Kendrick Lamar. I have, you know, I'm going to predict number one. What do you think? Is he already there?
I don't know. I know Be Humble was pretty high on the charts, but I don't know about the album.
I would have to say 500 units by the top of the week.
Easily. Because I've seen people go into Target just to buy
a physical copy.
I pre-ordered mine before it even came out. And I still got it for free. But I pre-ordered it because I'm like, for the love, for the culture.
For the culture. Got to do it one time. Are we done with Kendrick for
now? Yeah, I mean, we can talk about Kendrick all day. Y'all probably tired of us.
I know. You know how we do. We love us some Kendrick. Kung Fu Kenny, come through. Anyway, so Janet Jackson just had a baby.
It's Jackson. Just nasty.
And we're talking about the baby. So Janet, okay, because mm-hmm. we're not nasty. Oh. Not today.
Okay.
Anyway, so she just has a baby, and the rumors are milling about that she's getting a divorce from her husband. Mm-hmm. And apparently the divorce settlement says that she gets $500 million if she was married to him for over 5 years. So the announcement comes along 3 months after the birth of their baby, but 2 months after that five-year mark. And the debate on Twitter is that Janet Jackson, the legend, is a gold digger.
Wait, how do you be a gold digger when you already have gold?
How you fix your mouth to say anything against the Queen Janet when it comes to her bread when she's a self-made millionaire, okay?
How much is she worth?
Her net worth is estimated at $175 million. That's not even considering all of the other things that she has her hands in. You know what I mean?
But I mean, $500 million, that's way more than $175 million.
But they acting like she hurting for money.
She done banged the table.
I'm pissed. Like, why are y'all coming at Janet's head like she is, she has her own money. And
she got her own car. She got her own, sorry.
Independent, okay? She doesn't need anybody else's money. And for you to come at her like she don't have more number ones than you are, how old? 25, 20, however old you are, she got more number ones than that, okay?
But my thought is, what if she was in the relationship, they married 3 years in, she like, this shit ain't gonna work, nigga, you crazy, you got me messed up, dude. Like, I'm gonna stick it out for another 2 years and 2 months so I could go ahead and get that check.
A lot
does
of
that make her a gold digger, though?
No, it doesn't make her a gold digger because she was in that relationship. They had a prenup because he's a billionaire, and this was a deal that they worked out prior to. And if she wants to leave 5 years is in 1 day after that mark, then so what? She's a businesswoman, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Let's be clear about that. And then second, it ain't none of your business. And then third, he pens a letter saying that we are not getting a divorce. This is a separation, and we will be together forever.
He penned another one where he was basically having her back and saying that he loved her and everything too, right?
Yeah, this is the same.
Same one? Yeah. Okay, yeah. So I'm just like, we don't know what's happening and who really, I don't even care. Like, that's your business, Janet. Do what you need to do. I ain't mad at it.
You know what? I'm not mad at it either. I'm just mad that people are so quick to throw disrespect on her name. And I feel like that they can do that because she's a black woman. If it was anybody else.
No, I think we would have went after anybody.
Who is we?
Not we, but.
Who is we?
If it was, okay, so because she's a black woman, so I'm guessing who is going after her right now?
Black man.
Black man. If it was a white woman, then the black woman would go after her. Like if it was like a Kardashian and they like took some black man's money, I think we would go after her. Somebody's going to go after somebody in this situation.
That's already a self-made millionaire?
Yeah, if you
like, y'all really concerned about how Janet eating, really?
I personally am not, but I'm just saying the trend of how people attack people on Twitter or whatnot. Yes, somebody's gonna go after any woman who leaves 2 months after the prenup.
So it's not a black woman thing; it's just a woman.
It's a woman thing.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll go with that. It's a woman
but
thing.
If a man left a woman 2 months after and took $500 million, I'm going after his ass too.
They had a prenup. What's it to you, young blood?
I feel like that's what he agreed to it. So,
yeah.
Hey.
Anyway, and you know, I've heard a lot. I don't have any kids, but I hear a lot that after a baby is born into a relationship, sometimes that relationship changes and a woman decides that, you know what, I can't stand this
not
man
even
and
sometimes
even
most
deal
times the relationship
with this man no more ever.
Yeah, I hear most times the relationship changed because you go from being just the wife to being a mother, and then like mother comes first, you know, to a degree. So there it has to be an adjustment, and maybe the adjustment wasn't made. And I don't feel like she's just gonna leave him because of the money. Like if she
that's
left,
how
I feel like it's a legit
shaping
reason
the
why.
Narrative because of the money, but and no. I doubt it. Like, please get your life, okay? Anyway,
but she couldn't finish that tour though, so maybe she did
that's,
eat that
that's,
check.
That's
I'm
another
just
part. I think you know what? I think that's why people are really mad because she was like, you know what? I'm not gonna do this tour because I'm gonna focus on my family. And then she has a family, and she goes, you know what? I don't want my husband anymore, so I'm just gonna take my baby. And
I don't
be
think
over
she
here.
Didn't do the tour because of her family.
That's
I think
she
physically
said.
Couldn't do it.
Why? Because she's just too old.
Not even too old. I just think she's gone. She is older. And she's been doing it for such a long time, and you expect a certain. She can't just come out and rock side
and
to side
and be Rhythm Nation, Janet. Because that's what we want.
We want Rhythm Nation. If she's not going to come out and give you Rhythm Nation, nobody wants that. Nobody just wants to see Janet sitting in a chair singing.
She can't.
Because that's not what made her, got her to this point. Janet is where she is because of her theatrical costumes, dancing, all that stuff that she does. If she can't give it that level, and I feel like that's why she canceled the tour.
Okay, because her voice is not that strong to just be sitting in a chair singing.
She has a cute little...
Anyway,
I'm just kidding. Mama Janet. You know I love you.
You can take Janet?
Hell no.
What you mean, vocally?
Yeah.
Maybe on a dance floor. I don't know about vocally, though.
I can't take her on a dance floor either.
50-year-old Janet, you got her.
Oh, no. I respect you, Janet. I ain't going to take you. I was just playing.
We also love you, Janet, over here at Black Twitter Talk.
That's my first concert I ever went to, was her Velvet Rope Tour.
My first concert was Michael Jackson. Thriller.
Yeah, I was too young for that. So I saw Janet when
I was there.
I was too young for it. So the first one I could remember was Janet, Velvet Rope, and Usher Raymond opened for her for his My Way.
Oh, daddy took you, huh?
Goodbye, no. Next. That was my day, yes.
Damn. Oh, we sisters. Anyway, so I want to talk about Auntie Maxine. Auntie Maxine Water. She has been a fervent advocate of our impeaching POTUS right now because she keeps saying she's not having any of it. She's been attacked by the media, by certain right-wing media people, and she is back and she's better than ever, and she's saying that this experience with her working with millennials has been the most electrifying and energizing that she's had in a long time, and I just enjoy seeing her out and about. Every time I look on Twitter, it's a new viral clip of her.
Yeah, like she had one just recently where she's talking about, we got to get his ass out. And then this picture, too, where she has on the little denim jacket with the rose.
At the march.
Yes, and the rose is like a trending look right now, too. It's like a new little trend having the rose on the denim.
So is the pastel pink.
All of that. And I'm just like, why are you trending? Not just in social media, but with your fits, Maxine. Like, I just love it.
People are saying that she should run for president in 2020.
Nah.
I think she's a great congresswoman and that she serves us well there.
Yeah,
and,
but she responded and said that she doesn't want to run, but she's doing what she's doing so that she can help pave the way for the person who will run.
Other young people, millennials, that are being groomed for this office as we get that other fool out of here.
And I'm just inspired because, just being from America, and I don't know other cultures too, but like ageism is big. Like once you get to a certain age, like how we're even playing Janet, like, oh, you're 50, so you can't do your tour no more. I just love seeing her.
We're not playing Janet, but go ahead.
Not us, but people. I'm loving seeing her in her older age. Like I would have thought she would be trying to chill right now. So to see her coming out and go so hard and then being bashed by Bill O'Reilly and all this stuff, and she come back even better each time, it's like, okay, you give me hope. Like I could still be fly when I get older.
I want to say we pay homage to all of the older women who have paved the way for us, not just Auntie Maxine, my granny Fly too,
Of course.
All the women in the Maven in the civil rights movement and, that have done the work.
And I love that she's still alive and we're able to see it and honor her and appreciate her now, because I feel like that would be one of those things years from now after she was passed away. It's like, oh, what about women we've never heard of, unsung or Hidden Figures? Like, no,
she's a legend.
She's already here and we're already able to like really support and show love.
Okay, so we all have seen the United Passenger fiasco.
That was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous, but what's even more ridiculous is the post that was recently published in the article in New York Post, I think it was, where they were saying that Asians are model minorities because Asians are model minorities because they're saying that they're not from this country, but they have surpassed levels of wealth that white men have not been able to reach, and that, educationally, they're just, they're this, that, and the other. They're just basically naming all of these good so-called stereotypical attributes of Asian communities, of minorities, saying what's wrong with other minority groups? Why haven't they been able to do the same kinds of things?
Wait, so the article about the man being dragged off the plane turned into being about how Asians are great and all the other minorities are whack.
Yeah, and how they face all this adversity, how they were enslaved and how they were interned into camps and all this other stuff, but they're still doing great. And I just would have to say that article is just straight up BS, first and foremost, because Asian immigrants came to this country of their own volition, okay? And they're only highlighting attributes that are stereotypical. They don't talk about the hustle and the grind and all the other things that they've encountered. But African people, we didn't come here from our own volition. Am I yelling? I'm sorry. Damn. It's a different. We did not come here on our own volition. We were forced. So don't say that Asians are model minorities in comparison to who, us? Like, slow your roll. I think that the person who wrote it, his name was like Andrew or somebody. I don't know. They're pitting
but
people.
And also too with Asian, I mean, although most of them or a lot of them have a distinct phenotypical look about them, that's another thing that allows them to kind of merge assimilate into society, because they have straight hair, they have like complexions and whatnot, so that there's certain things that they don't have to, like,
they are still able to benefit from white supremacy, whereas we are not.
Yeah,
in any way, shape, or form. Honestly,
it's easier for them to assimilate if need be. I won't say easier because I don't know, I am not Asian, but I'm just saying from that perspective it's easier. But I don't really give a fuck about what they're doing. That don't have nothing to do with United people dragging that man off the plane. And I'm glad he was Asian, though, because I felt like if he were black or something, they'd be like, oh, whatever, fuck him.
It happened before. It happened to a black woman where she was dragged off the plane. And I keep hearing people that are not of color, that are not black, saying, oh, I wish it was me that got dragged off the plane because he finna get paid. A black woman did get drug off of a United flight, and she got fined. And she got this, that, and the other. I think she may have even gotten some jail time, but she didn't get paid.
You know, why are you overselling your flights to the point where you feel the need to drag the man off? Like, you really couldn't put your flight attendant on another flight.
You could have bought them flights to go on a different airline. You could have not oversold the flight. You could have offered the passenger an unturnable away amount of money. Like, but no, your answer was to drag him off the plane. I hope. And then they lost $800 million, like, over the week. In profit because of that incident.
Yeah, I'm trying to book a flight there now. See where the deal's at.
$27 flights, you know. What else is going on Twitter? Okay, so what's happening today on Twitter, I keep seeing this trending. There's a Cleveland man who has executed 14 people, and he is a black man. I believe he's like in his late 30s. He's a big black man.
He's only in his 30s?
He's like 37 or 38.
He in his 40s or his 50s.
Well, this is just what Twitter has reported.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So anyway, so he's on a shooting rampage, and he's shooting innocent people, and he's doing it live on Facebook, and he's recording everything that he's doing. And the reasoning for him executing these innocent people is because his girlfriend or his ex-girlfriend and his mother refused to talk to him. This is like the second case that we've had in recent, you know, weeks where there are men that are executing innocent people because of the relationships that they have estranged or whatever between women.
So the discussion you said on Twitter that's going on is about black masculinity.
Okay, so this one black feminist who always has some really strong points about, you know, black male masculinity, toxic masculinity, brought this point up and is using this as an example, which I understand why this would be used as an example, but this is still a developing story, sis.
So why do you feel like it should be used as an example of black toxic masculinity?
Because I think it is. Like, you are justifying you on a shooting rampage because of a mishap that has happened in a relationship with a black woman, two black women in this instance, your lover and your mother.
So why is it that and not mental illness?
What is the difference?
I don't know. What is the difference? Like, is there a difference?
I don't know. People are saying that the argument is that it is mental illness, but it's not toxic masculinity. And I'm just like, what are your credentials for you to say that there is a clear distinction between one or the other? And I understand how black men can feel attacked by that woman's thread because, you know, I feel like this is still a developing story. He didn't actually kill the woman and the mother that he's in a relationship with or that he has issues with. he's killing innocent people. So I think that this may not be the best way or best example for that, but they're still attacking her like she is the one that, you know.
So what are they saying to her?
I just don't feel comfortable repeating it. Dear. They're like calling her all kind of dumb bees, and they're coming at her appearance saying, oh, she's this, she's fat, and she's dark-skinned, so she must hate men. She hates men online, but she is still sexual with them offline. Like, they're coming at her neck, and I think that's ridiculous. Let's talk about the mental illness in the Black community, because I don't know that toxic masculinity, the way that we're conditioned to think about the relationship between men and women, is a difference. I don't know that there is a difference. I think that we are not well, and a lot of times we can't tell. So your immediate reaction was what?
My immediate reaction was mental illness, that to me, to go and kill a group of people that you don't even know, just pull over like, oh, live. I'm about to go kill this Black man and I'm going to record it. To me, that just off top, that something is mentally wrong with this man. But then, okay, now he starts shouting out this woman that he's dating and blaming her for it. For me, it still sounded like mental illness, just because of my own experience with men with mental illness. I'm like, okay, this nigga's crazy. So as far as him attaching it to the woman and blaming her for everything, I guess that could be toxic Black masculinity, but
definitely is toxic.
But I guess I just don't feel, I think lately as Black women, we've been on this rampage against Black men, and I feel like
who is we?
We as in Black Twitter women. Oh. The Black women feminists. I feel like sometimes when one Black man does something, then it's like, oh, y'all Black men got this big issue. And I'm not saying that it's not an issue in our community. I just feel like it's coming to this point where it's like anytime anybody does something, we're just like dubbing it like, see, this is that same thing we're talking about. And I guess to a degree it is, but that wasn't my initial, when I first heard about it, I didn't go straight to like, oh, here we go again, another Black man feeling entitled to.
I kind of did, because it reminded me of a Black man that feels entitled who kind of mm-hmm. shared space with me in my life at some point. So I understand how that can be perceived and how she took it there. But then I think if it's not that, then why aren't we able to have a healthy conversation and say, you know what, sis, maybe look at it from this perspective, and it could be.
But if we look at her initial tweet, there was no room for that. Her initial tweet started, it was Black men are toxic, period. Killing sprees in Cleveland, gaslighting on social media, sexual assault, violent shit, y'all need help. So there was no conversation.
And
opening right and there.
And that's why I understand. And I just feel like there's no compassion to be had for anybody on social media. And this is supposed to be a safe space. It doesn't much feel like it at all. And I just think that, you know, I don't even think it's her position to call out toxic Black male masculinity at every inch and every turn.
Because this is the same woman that called out yes. Kendrick. Like,
and it's just like, at some point, I feel like Black men have to speak up and say, look, this is what it is. This is what we could do. This is how we can prevent this, blah, 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 blah. And there are Black men on Twitter that are doing that, but they're being drowned out by
stuff like
threads
this.
Like that.
And then, like, now you're making me think that maybe there is an overlapping between mental illness and the Black toxic masculinity, or whatever it's called. And maybe that's also where the disconnect is happening as far as, like, healing it, because we're looking at it as two separate things, and maybe they are conjoined, and maybe there is work that needs to be done on both sides. And it's not something that you can just start yelling. Like, it's just, when you deal with someone with mental illness, you can't just be like, you're crazy. Like, that does not help the situation. So then if we look at it the same way with the Black masculinity, we can't be like, you guys need help, y'all are violent. Like, that's not gonna help the situation either. So it's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like we have to start approaching it in a different way in yeah. order for it to be to move anywhere.
And I think the Twitter threads are not necessarily the best place for that, because a lot of things are misconstrued and it just ends yeah. up being a fight.
Pretty much
nobody wants to fight on Twitter. Yeah. What else? Y'all watching Gorilla?
What's that?
Nah.
I ain't watching it.
I ain't watching it.
Well, why? Why did we bring it up? What is it?
Just real quick. It's a new series on Showtime. It's written and directed or produced by John Ridley, who mm-hmm. did 12 Years a Slave. And it talks about the Black liberation movement in the UK in the 70s. But there are no Black women in it. It stars Frida Pinto, who is an Asian woman. She's a a brown woman. But they're saying that this is an ahistorical approach to this historical story because mm-hmm. it erases black women. And John, it is really annoying.
And this is why we have Twitter rants, you guys. I tried to have your back, and then you go do some shit like this, okay?
So I get it. There's just so many things moving around. And John Ridley's point is, I'm in an interracial relationship, so I made the woman of this movie the lead interracial because of the things that blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, to me, if you wanted to make a movie about your interracial relationship, then do that. But this is a historical piece. And he's like, well, if you guys want to make your stories, go ahead and do that. But this is my story to tell. Hey, he's doubling down. But anyway, John Ridley, good luck to you, sir. But I ain't watching it.
That is true, though. If you don't like it, go create it.
We are.
We have and been. We speaking do. Of the Underground.
Oh, I didn't watch it. So all the people that watch Underground, if you haven't caught up, spoiler alert.
Spoiler. Y'all need to catch up. I already told y'all last season, Underground is where it's at. They've gotten a lot more viewers. They're back for a second season. If you're not on it, catch up. But
Spoiler.
Mm. It's not even a full spoiler. Like, I'm not going to tell you the details because there's a lot of stuff going on right now.
Well, what and you it took talk a about,
really Kales? Cool turn. But this last episode, I was really impressed and really stunned because the entire episode was a monologue from Harriet Tubman.
That's why people kept saying Aisha Hines did the damn thing on that last episode.
It was a monologue the full episode, and I think maybe a couple of characters said a couple things, but she was talking to the white abolitionist and she's telling her whole story and telling him where she was. So it was really interesting seeing her basically explain to the white abolitionists about what the movement really is from her perspective and explaining her story and kind of teaching them. And
is that why everybody was talking about how Harriet Tubman's husband was trash on Twitter this week?
Maybe.
I'm like, how are y'all
doing? Oh, yeah, because she talks about her husband. Like, she ran away. She went back to go get him, and he got married again.
Yeah.
He was married, and he didn't want to go, I don't think, and she was pissed.
No. I read something a little bit different, and I don't know how historically accurate the Underground is, but I read people like bashing her husband on Twitter, and I'm pretty sure
she went back to go get him and he had remarried. So then she felt like, what is she doing it for? And then at that moment, according to the Underground, is when she realized it was bigger than just going back to get her family. She started helping everybody, and the character playing her, I'm just like, Aisha Hines. My gosh, that's what her name is. Aisha, I want to know, I thought when you said Aisha Hines, I thought maybe it was the writer.
No, it's the actor. That place
I was in theater right now, I would be doing that monologue for every
all the little brown babies who I audition on a regular basis. If you're looking for monologues,
really good, and I'm just impressed overall by the Underground and the fact that they took that time, because I wasn't even sure when I first started if they were going to introduce her as a character, and then when they did, I was nervous that it was going to come off corny, because it's like, who is Harriet Tubman? Like, what does she look like and really feel like? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So to see them do it, and I'm like...
And do it well?
Yes. Look, it's amazing.
You getting all emo over there?
No, I really am. It's so good. So I'm like, you guys have to catch up. I don't know why this is not a show that we're all caught up on.
I don't know, but you talked about it a lot for the first season, and I didn't catch on until the very end, and I know I need to catch up.
Yes, because a lot of things have changed. The characters are in completely different places, and It's so much, you guys.
Okay, we're going to watch it.
You don't got to be black to watch it, y'all. Everybody needs to watch it. It's really good.
Okay, I think that's it for today, y'all. On this special Easter edition of Black Twitter Talk, thank you for joining us. We will catch y'all next time. I'm your host, Angie Skates. Find me on Twitter at Angie_Skates and on the gram at Big_Ange.
And I'm your girl, Kels. Find me on Twitter in the gram at The Urban Gypsy LA.
Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, @KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.